Here are our top stories this evening.
The 2014 Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries annual congress is underway, with business leaders facing a Herculean task of trying to revive the country's ailing manufacturing sector.
President Robert Mugabe today held his election victory celebrations at State House amid demonstrations by some activists of the MDCT, led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai.
And Zimbabwe's health minister says local communities should work closely with industry, commerce and other stakeholders in helping government to revamp the devastated health sector.
This is Studio 7 coming to you live from the Voice of America in Washington. The 2014 Confederation of Zimbabwe Industries Annual Congress is underway, with business leaders facing a Herculean task of trying to revive the country's ailing manufacturing sector. The Congress is expected to come up with recommendations that will shape the future of the economy and restore industry performance and growth to its peak levels. Those who addressed the Congress include Industry Minister Mike Bima, Central Bank Chief John Mangujga, and some captains of industry. Former CZI President Callisto Jokonya tells Studio 7's Blessing Zulu that the manufacturing sector has many challenges, especially the liquidity crunch.
It's normally our annual congress, but the key issue is that we are trying to review our manufacturing strategies and see whether we could do come away with recommendations that will help to restore confidence in the manufacturing sector. So really we are looking at reviving the manufacturing sector, which has been down since 2009. And so that's what we are sitting down, strategizing, come up with all positions which could help us to see how best we can move forward. We are also going to look into the question of, at least tomorrow, what are the hindrances that could be in line to stop the Zim Asset implementation programs.
What are some of the challenges that the manufacturers are facing at the moment?
Put it this way, I think one has to be reasonable and say that we have a negative perception internationally. I think Zimbabwe is not being viewed as the best investor destination, really. So these are things that really need to be addressed, both from a political standpoint as well as from an investor's interest standpoint. Instead, Zimbabwe needs to demonstrate a picture whereby that Zimbabwe is a good investment destination. And if we can't do that, investors have many choices in the world. And so we need to change that approach and be able to attract, as opposed to have probably an attitude where we don't seem to be seriously considering attracting them.
That was former CZI President Callisto Jokonya speaking with Studio 7's Blessing Zulu from Mutare.
Zimbabwe's fiscal space is dwindling, with the growing informalization of the economy coupled with continuous deindustrialization, while the banking sector remains shaky. Industrial capacity utilization is seen averaging between 27% and 29% by year end, with estimates it stood at 33% in the first half of the year, while non-performing loans are projected to average 18.5% from the current 16% by end of year. CZI National President Charles Msipa challenged government to come up with concrete measures to address liquidity challenges, capacity utilization, and funding for the government's economic blueprint, Zim Asset. But government has been struggling to find money to fund the $27 billion Zim Asset. Traditional allies like China have refused to commit. This has prompted Finance and Economic Development Minister Patrick Chinamasa and Mines and Mining Development Minister Walter Chidagwa to travel to Moscow to court investors.
You are listening to Studio 7 for Zimbabwe from the Voice of America in Washington.
Studio 7 can be found on the 4930, 5930, and 15455 kHz shortwave frequencies. We also broadcast on 909 medium wave or AM frequency.
Zimbabwe's health minister says the local communities should work closely with industry, commerce and other stakeholders in helping government to revamp the health sector, devastated over years by the country's economic problems. Our correspondent Taurai Shawa has more from the Midlands provincial capital of Gweru.
Speaking at the commissioning of a new casualty department at Gweru Provincial Hospital today, Dr. David Parirenyatwa acknowledged the problems bedeviling the health sector, noting that the partnership would go a long way in revitalizing it. Dr. Parirenyatwa said the infrastructure at the hospital was once in a sorry state, and the upgrading of the department would ensure that it offers quality services to locals. He thanked the Anglo-American company, which through the firm's chairman's fund, donated $1 million towards the construction of the casualty department, as well as the establishment of a visual inspection with acetic acid and cervicography unit, where women can undergo tests for cervical cancer.
It's not very encouraging. Now that you have a casualty like that, I think that we are going to be very, very proud and make sure that you actually train cadres in emergency medicine in a big way.
Speaking at the same occasion, former Midlands Governor Sifas Msipa, who addressed the gathering on behalf of Midlands Provincial Affairs Minister Jason Machaya, said it is not necessary for Zimbabweans to seek medical help outside the country, as local health personnel are equally competent and only need the necessary facilities and adequate remuneration to execute their duties. Msipa, a senior ZANU-PF member, revealed that he was recently hospitalized at a local hospital where he received quality treatment from dedicated medical practitioners. Member of Parliament for Gweru Urban, Cecil Rizai, who is also a member of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee on Health, said the establishment of the casualty department at Gweru Provincial Hospital through the help of a private company was a unique initiative which has to be emulated by other entities. Unki Mines board chairperson, July Ndlovu, who represented the parent Anglo-American company, said the funding of the casualty department is part of the company's focus to help uplift the communities in which it operates. Deputy Health Minister Dr. Paul Chimedza and senior health minister officials also attended the event. Gweru Provincial Hospital has 350 beds and the new casualty department is capable of handling 40 patients. Reporting for Studio 7 from Gweru, this is Taurai Shawa.
We wish you to be successful in everything you do. We are careful.
Zimbabwe's Matabeleland North region has managed to put 61% of its targeted 394 hectares under wheat cultivation this season as farmers grapple with high input costs, especially top dressing, fertilizer and electricity. Most of the crop has been planted in Umkuza district, where 116 hectares have been tilled with Bubi communal lands, the least with zero tillage. The areas with large hectares under wheat cultivation are Umkuza, Nkai and Lupane. Farmers say they are now facing acute shortages of fertilizer.
You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America in Washington.
We are broadcasting on 909 medium wave and on the 4930, 5940 and 15455 shortwave frequencies.
On the internet, you can find us at www.studio7news.com. You can also send us text messages at 001-202-465-0318.
Now, let's take a look at regional and international news.
Sierra Leone's President Ernest Bai Koroma has declared a state of emergency to help the country deal with the worst ever outbreak of the Ebola virus. In a national address, Mr. Koroma said the government is quarantining areas where the disease is found, restricting public meetings, searching houses to identify infected people, and updating procedures for passengers at the country's main airport. The measures will be in place for 60 to 90 days. The president said Sierra Leone is in a great fight and that the Ebola is beyond what any country or community can defeat.
The United Nations top human rights official is accusing Israel and Hamas militants of possible war crimes in the conflict in Gaza. Navy Pillay told reporters Thursday that Israel has attacked homes, schools, hospitals, and United Nations premises in an apparent violation of international law, adding that the international community cannot allow this lack of accountability to go on.
And an international team of experts has reached the crash site of the Malaysian Airlines Flight 17 in eastern Ukraine for the first time after days of attempts foiled by violence in the separatist-controlled area. The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe announced the development today, saying a small team of its monitors, accompanied by four Dutch and Australian experts, has reached the site using a new route. Reaching the crash site means the team can begin collecting key evidence from the crash and gain access to the human remains that have not yet been moved for identification. President Robert Mugabe today held his election victory celebration at State House amid demonstrations by some activists of the MDC led by former Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai. Our correspondent Thomas Chiripasi has more details from the capital.
As Mr. Mugabe held a lavish party at State House to celebrate his controversial win in last year's national elections, some MDCT youths gathered at their party's Harvest House headquarters and held protests, dismissing the poll outcome as fraudulent. Addressing the placard-carrying protesters, MDCT Youth Chairperson for Harare Province, Shakespeare Mukoi, said what is now needed was for Mr. Mugabe to negotiate with Tsvangirai for the holding of fresh and credible elections. Mukoi said ZANU-PF has failed to deliver on its election promises, such as providing more than 2 million jobs. The MDCT's acting National Youth Chairperson, Costa Machingauta, said the country's economic situation is worsening and called for protests until Mr. Mugabe left office. President Mugabe, who held his victory celebration party exactly a year after the polls, says the country's economy is on a rebound. Despite the polls being dismissed by the international community as fundamentally flawed, Mr. Mugabe strongly believes that the plebiscite was free, fair, and credible, as he received the backing of the Southern African Development Community and the African Union. Although Mr. Mugabe and his ZANU-PF party have claimed victory in last year's elections, spokesperson of the newly formed National Constitutional Assembly Party, Maddox Chivasa, says the majority of Zimbabweans are still living in abject poverty. This was echoed by Promise Mukwananzi, the youth wing secretary general of an MDCT offshoot calling itself MDC Renewal Team. Mukwananzi proposes that the country be led in the interim by a team of experts that will be tasked with revamping the country's economy. While the government has launched its economic blueprint called the Zimbabwe Agenda for Sustainable Socio-Economic Transformation, or ZIM Asset, Chivasa says his party sees itself as the only viable option in the 2018 national elections. Although Deputy Justice Minister Fortune Chasi admits that the elections were not perfect, albeit credible, he is urging Zimbabweans to be patient with the new ZANU-PF administration as it struggles to deliver on its election promises. He says the country's economy will record a significant... growth if sanctions imposed on Mr. Mugabe and his inner circle are suspended.
I also want to say that there has been a great degree of impatience by the public. And I think as public officers, as ministries, as government, we are responsive to that concern by the public. And we have a duty to try and explain why there may be delays if they are there. Some of the delays are really not real. Some of them are contrived because some of us are still within the frame of mind which says anything government does must be wrong, and anything that the opposition does must be right. But I think the reality on the ground now demonstrates to us that there is nobody with monopoly over democracy. There's nobody with monopoly over violence. We have seen it in the most unlikely places.
However, the spokesperson of the Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition, Mfundo Mlilo, says nothing will change in the country if Mr. Mugabe's legitimacy crisis is not resolved.
And in our view, we believe that Zimbabwe still has a crisis which manifests itself in a variety of ways. And one of the key ways within which that crisis manifests itself is the issue of governance. And then, of course, I'll talk about the issue of the constitution, the economy, and international engagement. These are issues posted 1 July, which we as an institution are still grappling with and which we think constitute what we would call the Zimbabwe question or the Zimbabwe crisis.
Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition is also calling for the alignment of all laws to the new constitution to avert a possible constitutional crisis. Meanwhile, political analyst and director of the Zimbabwe Democracy Institute, Pedzisai Ruhanya, says the country's economic policies should promote democracy in order to allow foreign direct investment.
I think the problem that the state is facing or the country is facing is a problem of what I would call marketization of the economy without democratization. So ZANU-PF is attempting to liberalize the economy or to have market forces to run the economy. But the problem that we have are undemocratic practices. That is ZANU-PF. So it's having marketization without democratization or liberalization of the economy with illiberal politics. So they must liberalize both the economy of the state and the politics of the state. There must be resonance between economic policies and political processes or democratic processes.
Thank you. Some economists blame the current economic situation on land reforms spearheaded by the ZANU-PF government in 2000. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
For perspective, we turned to political analyst Charles Mangongera with MDC Leanings and Tafazwa Msarara, who backs ZANU-PF, on their take of ZANU-PF's 1 year in office following last year's elections. Mangongera says there's nothing to cheer for many following ZANU-PF's electoral victory in last year's July 31 elections, noting jobs are fast disappearing and living standards continue to plummet for the majority of the country's population.
If you look at the general conditions that are currently prevailing, you know, everyone would agree that the economy is in bad shape in terms of, you know, if you look at joblessness and unemployment, many companies are closing shop, thousands of workers are losing jobs, and this is affecting people's livelihoods. I mean, I have had the privilege of traveling around the country, particularly in rural communities. I spent a good part of yesterday in Mburi, in Mashonaland and Central. And the stories that I'm hearing are stories of, you know, serious deprivation, serious lack of access to income by the people. You know, you would expect that, you know, a year after elections, some of the promises that ZANU-PF made have not been fulfilled. One of those promises was to create at least over 2 million jobs, which means by now they must have created at least 400,000 jobs. But it looks like that's not happening. In fact, we are losing jobs. And I think that this is a serious problem for people in communities. And if you talk to people across the political divide, including ZANU-PF people who are conversant on economic issues, they will tell you that this country is in bad shape. And, you know, there's been rapid deindustrialization. And that is a big problem because people's livelihoods are being affected.
Looking at the issue not only of governance, but going back to the issue of the economy, that is the most pressing issue that many people are talking about, that your party has been unable to provide the jobs that it promised. Where do you see Zimbabwe going in the next year as today we start another new year, as the second year of ZANU-PF in power since the death of the GNU?
Well, I think one thing that is made clear is that the formula that we use to calculate unemployment is contestable. We believe that somebody who is doing his small ventures, his businesses there, cannot be regarded as unemployed. Otherwise, if you go by 90% unemployment, then at least 9 every 10 people have got no money. There'll be chaos in the country. We have households that continue to thrive, that continue to eat. Difficult as it might be in some instances, but really they've got some source of income. And to us, example of that is employment. Employment is not working for a white man. Employment is having some activity, a lawful activity, a lawful economic activity that generates income and be able to sustain the livelihoods of household. The issues of economy are at the center of the ZANU-PF agenda. That's why we came up with the Zim Asset. Zim Asset is a formal response or a formal version of our manifesto that would want an organized government, deliberate plan, to economic plan, that is, to ensure that certain activities in the country, are resuscitated, are actually revamped in some instances. And we have seen notable achievements in terms of the tobacco. We've seen the zim steel coming in. We've seen the formalization of the gold miners in the hundreds of thousands. And really, there's a sustained effort by the Revolutionary Party to make sure that the economic gains are delivered to every household stable. But look, you never get anything positive from Mwangangela as long as MDC is not in power. He has said our economy is in downfall in 2008, and we wonder whether it's still falling. The combined closures that are being experienced now are a result of a sustained knock on our economy. The Americans have made it clear that they would want the Zimbabwean economy to scream, and it's on record. So we actually have common closures because of the economic sanctions that we've alluded to. The economic sanctions, that position has been admitted by AU, SADC, and other progressive forces. That definitely there is a hemorrhage, economic hemorrhage caused by the economic sanctions. So really, you cannot blame that on the ZANU-PF, because the intention was very clear. The former Assistant Secretary of State said it very clear that in order to separate the people of Zimbabwe from ZANU-PF, we should make the economy scream. So we are now seeing the manifestations of that machination. But ZANU-PF is not deterred. ZANU-PF is focused to make sure that the economy turns around again.
I'll come to you, Mr. Mangongera, and let's talk about governance issues in ZANU-PF, in the MDC, and other smaller political parties. What have you seen so far?
In my view, there's been a serious regression in terms of democratic practice in this country. If you look at what has happened in the MDC, a party that I was associated with, it's very unfortunate in the sense that you have a political party which has a lot of promise, which is the hope of many Zimbabweans in terms of being the alternative to the establishment. But because of the absence of a democratic culture, the absence of you know, mechanisms for conflict resolution, we see that hope being decimated. We see the people's dream being obliterated at the altar of expedience and personal ambition and, you know, personification of the struggle. And that's very unfortunate.
That was political analyst Charles Mangongera. You also heard the views of political analyst Tafaz Gwamsarara of ZANU-PF. They were both giving us their take on what they think about ZANU-PF's year in office following 2013 July 31 elections.
The Southern African Editors Forum says it is gravely concerned that journalists wishing to cover the 34th SADC summit in Zimbabwe are expected to pay for accreditation. In a statement today, the Editors Forum said an email sent by the SADC public relations head, Lifa Martin, to media shows that journalists are expected to pay and that the accreditation fees have more than doubled specifically for the coverage of this summit, which will see President Robert Mugabe take over the rotating chairmanship from newly elected Malawian President Peter Mutharika.
And now going over to our Yali youths, one of the 30 Zimbabwean Mandela Young African Leaders Initiative fellows, Brian Geza, says some life-saving swimming lessons he took at his local pool in Mbare came in handy in New Orleans, where he was during part of his stay in the United States. Geza says he rescued another fellow from drowning when he was in a boat cruise with other fellows. The choreographer tells the Studio 7's Marvelous Ntlanganyawie his quick reaction to jump into a river to take care of some people is part of the Ubuntu teachings.
Yeah, we're in Baton Rouge, to be specific, in the bayou. And one of my colleagues' boat happened to capsize. And he is not a swimmer, therefore he was drowning. And we were 25 of us from 17 different countries. So happened nobody could swim to save the guy. People thought he was joking, but he was drowning. Was some of our colleagues were feeding the alligators because we had gone on a school tour. And I couldn't bear the picture of having a victim right before my eyes. So I had to dive in. Upon saving him, he was pushing me in the water now. And luckily in Mbare, we have George Hartley swimming pool, where I learned a trick or two on how to swim. So I managed to pull the guy ashore.
Was this one of the fellows, or this was just a random person?
This was one of the fellows. He's one of the fellows.
And how has he reacted to what you did, and where is he from?
He's from Mauritius, and we're friends for life, and daily, he continues to say, thank you, my brother. It is good to have that word, my brother. You know, he's very thankful. And it gave us more, not for bonding, but it made us family.
Also, you lost some of your own personal belongings when you dived into the river. What did you lose? And tell us a little bit about the person that you rescued.
Yeah, he's Way Poncho from Mauritius. He's a close brother of mine. Two cell phones in the process, damaged permanently. Cash sold in the water. My passport, it's paper. Luckily, fine, it's a Zimbabwean passport. I can manage to get back home. But I need to have a new one. And hopefully, it won't be one of those difficult processes.
And so what message do you have of hope when you go back and retell this story to some people back in Mbare, the community where you work?
As you know, Mbare, we believe in Ubuntu, the spirit of oneness, the spirit of being a person, you belong to the people. It's not about yourself. Because I'm a child that was raised in the ghetto. According to our proverb, it takes a village to raise a child. I was raised in the village of Mbare. So my message to all the youth, even the elder and even the young, is to say continue thriving for Ubuntu, irregardless of where you're from, who you are, and above all, it's all about you.
And also, we saw in a presentation at the closing ceremony, Michelle Obama mentioning that men need to take an active role in promoting, you know, women's rights, because it's from the way that you treat your sister, your mother, your wife, that determines how they end up. What's your takeaway from that speech?
You know, she made me drip some tears because I'm a single father. When she mentioned the issue about family, I'm a father of three, and it made me realize how important my sons are, my daughter is, and above all, just to love people, appreciate who they are, irregardless of them not having achieved their goals. And she encouraged me to give positive messages, advocate for women to believe in themselves more and to look further and beyond for example, my own personal achievements, to tell them you can be better than me. Looking at
That was Zimbabwe choreographer and YALI fellow Brian